Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Thank you so much for downloading our show. We appreciate it a great deal. We thank you so much for listening, subscribing, and liking, and tweeting, and everything that comes into play when you listen to a podcast, because we really do appreciate it. We do this for fun, and Matt and I talk about this even when we're not recording, so we'd be doing this anyway, but the sheer fact that you are listening to my voice right now warms my cockles, because you chose to listen to us, and nobody's forcing you to.
Where are you going with this? This is the oddest intro that you've ever done.
I don't know where I'm going with it, but I like it. Anyway, last week we teased with A View to a Kill, and you're probably wondering, okay, well, what are they going to talk about? Obviously something Bond-related, or you could be thinking, maybe they're going to do a podcast all on Duran Duran, which is quite possible if it was up to me. But we are not talking about Duran Duran. Okay, hey, I didn't know that. Hey, I'm learning something new about you. Well, it's not today, but we are going to be talking about James Bond theme music. Not the James Bond openers, not James Bond movies, like not our favorites or anything like that, but we're doing our top five James Bond themes. That's the opening theme during the credits. But before we get into that, we have a little bit of geek news. It was kind of hard finding the geek news today. I mean, one thing that was pretty big was that Daredevil dropped, but you and I are not as hardcore as other people because we have jobs, but we couldn't stream all the episodes all at once. Let's not, four episodes in.
Let's not insult what's potentially part of our listener base. They may have jobs too.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Well, no offense, Mint. It was a cheap shot below the belt, and I apologize to the geek listeners. But okay, so I'm four episodes in. I guess you're losing MCU cred as we speak, because you're only half an episode in.
Well, yes, but that's because I'm editing and I got 5 hours of sleep the night before, so, you know. And plus, I'm too busy waiting for reactions for Age of Ultron to come in to focus on anything but.
Okay, here's the thing, people. I'm talking directly to the listeners right now. Matt, you go into another room or something.
Great.
Like that. People at home, you know, you and I have a deep connection, but I mean, I have a deeper connection with Matt, and you know, he's a good friend of mine. I really care about him, and you know, he's just between you and I, he's really starting to worry me, because what he'll do is, I mean, like, you know, we live in the States, and Age of Ultron hasn't even opened yet in the States. I mean, we gotta wait until the 30th and the 1st and everything like that. But he stays up at night, you know. Most likely in a cold sweat. I don't know. I'm not there. But he stays up at night just waiting for the figures around the world to come in about how much Age of Ultron is making and what the critics are saying. I mean, he wants it to do so well, so badly, that he's hoping that it's like the little engine that could, that it's just like, I think I can. And he just keeps on going, and he reads and reads, and he just scrolls and scrolls on his phone. And I think he's losing sleep, and soon he's going to start losing weight. And then he's going to start losing friends. And I just think it's up to us, because we're close friends, to bring him back to the world. All right, Matt, you can come in. You can come in.
Thank you. It was cold out there.
Yeah, we totally weren't talking about you. So what was that about, Age of Ultron? What about that? What are you doing?
I felt a chilly vibe out there. It's the vibe I get when I hear someone talking crap about me somewhere else. So never mind what I'm doing with Age of Ultron.
Oh my. Okay, so now you saw Winter Soldier 7 times, is that right?
In the theater.
Do you have any plans for a repeat, or even going beyond that with Age of Ultron?
I'm trying to beat the Star Trek record with Age of Ultron. Star Trek 09 was 8.
Star Trek 09 was 8. Winter Soldier 7. I don't even know what I've seen in the theater. I think my max is 3. I think that's the most I've seen something in the theater. I think it was Serenity. It was either Serenity or Star Trek 09.
Mm-hmm.
I might have tied with 3 on that one.
But yes, so sue me for being so, you know, anxious about a movie that I've been waiting for literally 3 years for.
I think that's the perfect word for it. You're anxious about this, like, to the nth degree.
And I realize how sad this sounds, but I got spanked so bad with Star Trek Into Darkness, and not because I didn't like it, but it was because I was the only one who ended up liking it. So,
but yet it made so much money, which is true. But speaking of sci-fi, we should talk about a franchise that is often associated with Star Trek, and I still don't know why. I think it's just because the word star is in the title.
And now they share a director.
Now they share a director, which is fine. But anyway, Star Wars, and we're not talking about The Force Unleashed. What we're talking about is that Star Wars, the entire franchise, has been released on digital HD for the first time. We're talking iTunes, Vudu, I think Vudu, right?
I think so.
Amazon?
Yeah. You followed this a little bit more closely than I did because you're a little bit more into Star Wars than I am. But I have a question for you because I don't know specifics yet. Are these the retinkered versions that have been put on HD, or is Disney restoring some of the original footage?
There's a widespread rumor that before this was released, everyone was like, oh my God, they're going to do the theatricals because it's Disney now. And like the moment that Disney bought Lucasfilm and the rights to all the Star Wars films and everything like that, the moment the news broke, the moment the rumor of the news of Disney buying Lucasfilm broke, people were saying, we're going to get the theatrical cuts in HD. And so every single bit of Star Wars news is somehow tied to people saying, we're going to get the theatrical cuts on HD. Yeah. I'm one of those people where I actually do believe that because Disney now owns Lucasfilm, that they're going to give the fans what they want. Unless George was a complete douchebag and like wrote it into his contract when he sold Lucasfilm, that they would never be released. But no, these are the Blu-ray cuts. The movies that were released on iTunes and Vudu and Amazon and all that business are the Blu-ray copies, with one very minor, but some would say monumental difference.
Which is
the 20th Century fanfare is no longer at the beginning, except for A New Hope.
Right, because as far from what I've read, Fox still has distribution rights just for that film.
Yes, Fox still has distribution rights just for Star Wars 4 or Star Wars or A New Hope, whatever you want to call it, the first one. And so a lot of people are really bummed. And I get it. I understand it. You know, this is just how it has to be. I mean, this is business. You know?
Bummed bordering on disconcerted. I mean, like it's like. It's like they got a limb amputated, and there's like, you know, instead of the Phantom Menace, it's this Phantom Limb Syndrome without the fanfare.
Yeah, it's the outcry online was pretty dramatic without the fanfare, because it's the fanfare has become so much a part of the Star Wars franchise that they even released it past tense now on the scores and the albums and the CDs that they would sell in stores, is that they would put the fanfare at the beginning, and like the first track would say fanfare and then opening title,
right?
And that's how much of it, like, I don't think there's any other movie that did that. I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right, except for any soundtracks where the fanfare was altered in some sense. I think the only other one that I can think of is, you remember how they altered it for the beginning of Alien 3?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was on the soundtrack, but
I'm wondering if Moulin Rouge did that too, because they had a big production about it. Like, they had the little guy.
I think it is on the soundtrack.
Is it on there? Yeah. I remember that, seeing that in the theater, like the curtains in the movie, you know, spread apart, and then the guy was conducting the orchestra at the beginning. He was just going, waving his arms like crazy.
Well, that's how I imagine that the 20th Century Fox fanfare is conducted.
I hope so. I mean, we need, like, if we haven't had live footage yet, we need it. And, but yeah, so, I mean, I remember as a kid, like, hearing the Fox fanfare before a movie that wasn't Star Wars, and I was like, what is this? This isn't Star Wars? What's going on?
Yeah, because 20th Century Fox makes no other movies but Star Wars.
Well, I was quite little at the time, and my dad's like, yeah, it's a distribution company. This is what they do. And I was like, oh, okay. But even well into my 20s, when I would hear the fanfare, all I could think about is A New Hope.
But to your point, Tristan, I do know some people who can't see even the logo without expecting Lucasfilm to pop up after it.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like, it's just so ingrained in our culture and our psyche. And so I get it why people are bummed. Why people are like, but the thing is that people are like screaming online saying, I'm not going to buy it until you put the fanfare back. And I was like, well, I guess you're never going to buy it then.
But, like, the thing that I found surprising, and don't kill me, Star Wars fans, I understand that it's disconcerting, but at the same time, did you really think that Disney was going to put the Fox logo and fanfare at the beginning of their films?
I mean, seriously, that's the thing, is that, like, that's the entire reason why the Clone Wars was canceled. Okay, they canceled an entire show, a lucrative show, because of the distribution rights, because Disney's not going to give money to another company if they don't have to. They canceled an entire show and built a new one to replace it so that they didn't have to pay extra distribution rights. And yeah, they're going to get rid of the fanfare.
The thing that I thought would be funny is, what if they put, you know, the new Disney logo with the fireworks and the castle and all that sort of stuff? What if they put that at the beginning? What if they put that at the beginning of Star Wars, but put the Fox fanfare over it so that, like, you're not missing anything?
Oh my gosh, someone needs to put that together and throw that up on YouTube.
And then put Lucasfilm, the logo after it, just as it was before.
Oh my gosh. I, like, if people were upset now, I mean, they'd be committing suicide if that happened. Now, okay, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing that we should put into perspective is that, I mean, they tried hard. I mean, like, Lucasfilm, like, the new Lucasfilm tried hard. They're like, okay, well, we're not going to have the fanfare. Let's do something that is not a complete tonal shift, you know, like, let's do something that is a little, you know, like, is a obviously a little different, but still Star Wars-y. And so they just repurpose some of John Williams' score. It's epic, it's introductory, and it screams Star Wars at you, and then it goes into the opening theme, and I'm like, okay, all right, I get it.
I don't mind it. I listened to it because all people could post yesterday was videos of the new fanfare, and I think it sounds fine. I think it'll even sound better when it's in front of Star Wars 7 and you're hearing it on surround sound. Here we're just hearing it on little dinky YouTube speakers. But the thing that I found so interesting, and I didn't know this until I read some articles, is that John Williams, when he composed the Star Wars theme, the main theme, he composed it in the same key as the Fox fanfare so that it would naturally lead from one to the other.
I didn't know that.
At least that's something that I read. I don't know if it's true or not, but okay. It was written by someone who's more of a Star Wars fan than I am, so I take them at their word.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's really cool. I was on my Apple TV today, this morning, and so they started advertising Star Wars franchise, you know, right at the top scroll, and so I clicked on it, and it said $90 for all six films, and
that's a lot for all six films.
I know, right? I mean, that's kind of a lot, and it was weird because I had this gut reaction, and guys, I know this isn't logical, okay? I know that this is what I'm about to say is stupid, but I'm saying that this was what my primal brain and my gut was just screaming at that first millisecond of clicking out and finding the post, is that I clicked on it, saw $90, and I was like, this should be free. Like, I just said it out loud, and no one was around me. My wife wasn't even around me. She wasn't even home, and I just went, this should be free, okay? I've already spent a lot of money on Star Wars. They should give this to me for free.
Disney did not buy Lucasfilm and Star Wars to give Star Wars stuff away for free.
I know that. It's absurd. I realize that, and I'm not trying to defend it. I'm just saying that was my gut reaction because I bought the laser discs. I bought the VHS originals. I bought the VHS special editions. I bought the VHS re-releases. I bought the DVD special editions, the DVD re-releases. I bought the Blu-rays. I totally didn't buy the Blu-rays. I totally stole them from a friend of mine.
Well, then there you go. You can spend the $90 that you didn't spend on the Blu-rays on these digital HD ones.
Oh my gosh. And just, it's just all this money. And not to mention going to see them in the theater like multiple times. And you invest so much money into a franchise. Like with Star Trek, though, I never got that reaction. Like whenever they came out with stuff like that, I was just like, oh yeah, here's the check. You know, like I like with Star Trek, I'm always just like, here's my money. Just take it, whatever.
And it's a big check too, because the Star Trek, and maybe Star Wars has the same thing, but I'm not as familiar with the merchandise. Star Trek Blu-rays and DVDs and collections have what I like to call the Star Trek surcharge, which, I mean, like, compared to normal seasons of Blu-rays for other shows, the Star Trek ones are way more expensive, but we'll pay it because they know that we're going to buy it anyway.
I think they know that geeks really speak with their wallet. But I got them at ridiculous prices. Like, I waited on the Star Trek Blu-rays until I think I got the... I think I got the original six for like $25 on Blu-ray.
Yeah, but like, yeah, well, once you find deals like that. But I'm thinking back, do you remember when the first one to be put out on DVD as in seasons was Next Generation?
You remember? Oh, you're talking about Seasons. Yeah, season. Yeah, okay. Seasons. I guess.
Seasons.
Yeah, with Seasons are a totally different animal in my mind. Like, I was talking about the movies, but yeah, like Seasons are a completely different animal.
But anyway, I don't think that this is going to be a major blow to Star Wars. It's just going to be a transition period. And like I said, if Star Wars Episode 7 is good, then it's not going to matter which fanfare is at the beginning of it.
You're absolutely right. I think we could sum this up with two words, and that's growing pains.
Yes. It's a transition. It's a transition. It's the puberty of Star Wars.
All right. Well, we talked for about 15 minutes on that.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that we were going to be able to fill up that much time.
I was going to say, and you were so afraid before the show that we wouldn't be able to talk about Star Wars for 15 minutes.
Now we can move on to our real subject, or the cornerstone of the podcast today, and that is James Bond themes, our top five. Now, this is one of those times when this is really hard to go from five to one, you know?
Yeah, and at the same time, I got my order, but I have to tell you, for me, this was harder than picking out favorite movie themes, because there's not too many, I'll be honest with you, there's not too many that I really don't like.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of great, I mean, there's no bad songs in the James Bond themes. I mean, you either go from freaking fantastic to mediocre, you know?
Well, as a minor spoiler to my list, I picked out my five best ones. I picked out three honorable mentions / alternates because I figured there's more potential for crossover in this one.
Yeah, I have one honorable mention that pained me really hard to take it off the list. I mean, like, I could, this would be easier to do a top 10 than a top five.
Yeah, but I also have three least favorites, but I won't touch on those. But I wanted to know what my three songs that I don't really care for are.
Oh, well, we could talk about those. I mean, I didn't make that list, but as we go along, I'll kind of make it in my head if you want to, because I totally have an opinion on that.
Of course you do.
All right, well, let's start with number five. I went first last time. How about you go first this time?
Okay, my number five is one that I don't think springs to mind in a lot of people. I tried to pick some of the more underrated ones, in my opinion. I think, except for my number one, which I think is widely acknowledged as one of the best. But number five is one that I don't think a lot of people think about. It's actually one that I'm ashamed to admit I've done at karaoke before, and it's a really hard song to do. And that's 1981, Sheena Easton, For Your Eyes Only.
You can see so much in me, so much in me. That's new.
Think of this one, For Your Eyes Only. I mean, that was a big hit in the 80s when that
came out. But compared to the pantheon of other songs, it's further down on the list, I think, when people are ranking them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
But there's something about this song that I really like. It's sung very passionately, as most Bond themes are. I like Sheena Easton's voice. And what I liked about the sequence in the actual film is it's the one time that you actually see the person who's singing the song in the opening credits. Remember, they put her face in over the credits.
That's right. I remember being so shocked as a kid. I was like, whoa, 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 what is this? What is this? What is this?
But it's the synth, it's the melody, and like I said, it's a really hard song. So I give props to her for sustaining that song. But that's my number five. I don't know much that you could say about it, but what I like about this song and what I like about all other Bond theme songs is, if you notice, is that throughout the movies, they use the theme as sort of a musical motif. When they're not using the James Bond theme, they'll use bits and pieces from the theme song. So,
yeah, that was, they definitely did that in like the Sean Connery and Roger Moore days. That was
that's what I noticed
that was
mostly.
Pretty key,
but
yeah.
I have to say, more of those, not to spoil the rest of my list, but Roger Moore, people have opinions on his Bond films, and they may not stack up to something like the Sean Connery or the Daniel Craigs or whatever, but I gotta say, his era had some of the best themes, so.
As I was going through the list, I started thinking about that, and I was like, I am not a Roger Moore fan. I mean, throw me into a category if you want to, but I'm not a Roger Moore fan. Even when I was a kid, I was just like, oh, this guy isn't Bond, but then I read... as I started researching more, I was like, wow, he did more than any other Bond. What happened? But his music was amazing.
So that would be my number five. I really like that song. I like how sensual it is. And I I'm a child of the 80s. I like 80s music, and I like the synth track to that song. So,
all right. Well, I'll just step right into it. I'll take your I'll take your lead here. And my number five is The Living Daylights from 1987.
That's one of my honorable mentions.
I friggin' love this. I mean, it's... I think what it is the synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just those opening notes is like...
Hey, drive, where we going? I swear, my nerves are shaking.
Well, speaking from my track with Sheena Easton, that song is really 80s, Living Daylights. I mean...
Yes, yeah, Living Daylights is hardcore 80s. I mean, it was sung by a band called A-ha. I mean, come on, you can't get much 80ers than that.
And if you don't know who they are, they're the same people who did Take On Me.
Yeah, and you can absolutely hear it. And yeah, it's like, I remember like this song would get stuck in my head all the time. All the friggin' time. And whenever someone would say it was down to the wire, I would immediately break out in the song, much to others' chagrin. And, because it's like, it's down to the wire. Bam, bam, bam. It was so unlike anything that we heard before. Actually, I'd say like A View to a Kill and The Living Daylights were like, it's opened up this new ability to get a little bit poppier. Because, before with Your For Your Eyes Only, and then after that is All Time High for Octopussy. I mean, it was, it's all very sensual, melodic. And then all of a sudden, bam, you have Duran Duran and then A-ha. It's a very big tonal shift in the 80s from 81, 83 to 85 and 87. And I think as a kid, it would just get stuck in my head all the time. And I loved Timothy Dalton as Bond. Absolutely.
Yeah, when we eventually talk about the Bond films, because it's coming, people. Spectre's coming later this year, so we're going to talk about it at some point this year.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Dalton, I think, is so vastly underrated as a Bond, because he only had two films to make an impression, but I watched those two films leading up to Skyfall last time a Bond film came out, and License to Kill, I think, has its problems, but Living Daylights, yes, especially... I was surprised how much I really liked that film. And I think that it was just a matter of wrong place, wrong time, because essentially what Timothy Dalton's doing is really not that far off from what Daniel Craig is doing now.
You know what? I never really thought of it that way before, but I think you hit it on the head. I think you're absolutely right, because he was suave and rough, and that's what Daniel Craig is doing. I mean, a lot of people, like I remember growing up, my dad said, I don't know if I want to show you the Timothy Dalton ones because they're so violent. And, during that time, they were violent compared to the other ones.
Oh, sure.
Compared to Connery and Moore. But now, I mean, you practically rate this G.
But at the same time, like I said, I think it was just wrong place, wrong time, because it's sandwiched in between two, not sillier, but two campier Bonds and Moore and Brosnan. But, speaking to the song and getting off the movies for a second, I really like this song. Like I said, it was one of my honorable mentions. I think that, like For Your Eyes Only, I think that this one is even kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit, just because, and this is not to the detriment of this song, but it comes right after A View to a Kill. And it's kind of in the same vein. So I think a lot of people favor the Duran Duran song over this one. But I really like this one. But it's so comparable because it's done with the same kind of synth. It's the same era of 80s music. They're in the sort of the same vein. So I think it kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But it's a great song. And a great movie, by the way.
All right, what's your number four?
My number four is, well, we were debating whether or not to open it to all 23 Bond films or to just the pre-Craig Bond films. And we decided that all of them were fair game because, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to do a later song where there's only four choices?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm surprised this didn't rate higher, but it hasn't had time to become a classic yet. But my number four is Skyfall by Adele.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to ten. Feel the earth move and then hear my heart burn. Drowned and dreamt this moment so overdue I owe them swept away I'm stolen let the sky fall when it crumbles we will stand tall.
I was really wondering where this was going to fall on your list.
I really like this song because, and I'll explain why. I remember when this came out, it was on iTunes because, again, this is the most recent Bond film, so it was premiered on iTunes, I think. And I listened to it, and Adele had already had a major year the year before with her album that won insane amount of Grammys, was number one for, I think, the whole year. So, but when I heard that she was doing the Bond theme, I'm like, that actually could work because she's got the voice for it. And then when I heard the song, the best way I could describe it is if it's a Shirley Bassey-esque song for the 21st century. Mm-hmm. If Skyfall was a movie that was made in the 60s, Shirley Bassey would have done this theme.
I completely agree with you because this song is that, like, I'm surprised why this isn't on my list. I mean, like, I tried to show some love to the older ones, but Skyfall, I was visiting my parents, and this was well before Skyfall was released, and my dad was in the basement in the shower, and he was cranking up the radio as he always does when he showers, and my mom and I were in the living room right above it, and he was... Skyfall comes on the radio, and it's pretty loud. But then all of a sudden, like mid shower, you hear it just crank up, and my mom starts, you know, pounding on the floor with her foot, saying, "Turn that down." And then after he's done, he comes up and he's like, "Have you heard that before, Tristan? That's a really good song." And I was like, "Yeah, it is a good song." He's like, "That sounds like a Bond theme." And I said, "Dad, it is." And he's like, "What?" And like seriously, so. Like, it sounds like a Bond theme. Like, my dad, who's a huge Bond fan...
I mean, it does use the James Bond theme in it.
Okay, don't shit on my point, okay? Here's the thing. Is that, like, my dad, who's a huge Bond fan, knows everything about the movies, listens to all the themes, has the CD in his car. Like, to him, like, the very essence of the song harken back to older style Bond.
It
sounded like a Bond film, a Bond song, and I think that's why I like it so much, is because it's a popular song that you can put on the radio, but at the same time you're like, that belongs in a Bond movie.
I heard it and I was just kind of blown away. I was like, if the movie's half as good as the song, we're in for a good film, and it was far beyond what I could have hoped for. But the thing I like about it too is that it uses the Bond theme in it, but it sounds so different because if you think about it, Skyfall, the song, is kind of like a funeral dirge. The way that it's slow, it's sort of melancholy. It's you know, it starts off with "This is the end."
That's right. Yeah.
And so it was so somber, and that's not a bad thing though, because the movie was very serious and it was looking back on 50 years as a franchise. And spoiler alert for someone who hasn't seen it, someone important does die at the end. Mm-hmm. So you know, it was completely and thematically a perfect fit. So it has to end up on my top five. I wonder if it'll even get higher, but like I said, it's only been 3 years. It has to age. So
I think you're right. I think that's why it didn't make my list, is because it's just so new that it needs to age. But as far as quality goes, it's definitely up there. All right. Well, I mean, my number four, just to kind of switch gears a little bit and kind of go back to what we were talking about, there's not too much more you can say, but my number four is A View to a Kill by Duran Duran. A sacred wine, a mystery gaping inside. I think this is great. I like Duran Duran as a band. I really like A View to a Kill, the movie. I think
you do.
Like it's I think it's I know. It's just like, I feel like it's just so over the top.
I love the song, but we'll talk about the movie at some point.
Well, I mean, like with the movie, I mean, it's so ridiculous, it's so far over the top that you just kind of try to enjoy it, because
Roger Moore looks 300 years old.
Like, Roger Moore's definitely aging, so you're just like, clearly this has to be his last one. And it has Grace Jones in it. It has friggin' Christopher Walken.
Two are the reason to watch the film. Grace Jones and Christopher Walken.
I love those two, and I love them in the movie, but it's ridiculous that they're in a Bond movie. That's the thing. But the thing is, like, A View to a Kill is a weird movie that you can enjoy because it's weird. Moonraker is a weird movie that's just bad.
Yeah, well, that
you know, like, that's the kind of two different kinds of ridiculousness in my mind. But with the song, I mean, like, when you open it up, you're just like, hey, this might be a good movie, you know, and you were kind of wrong, but
I don't know. I think the fact that that he's skiing down the mountain to Beach Boys before the song even comes on kind of shot that in the foot.
Yeah, it's hard, but I mean, I love the vocals from Duran Duran. It's so 80s, it's so of its time. And also, I just like, there's this emotion, there's this pain in their voice that, even though they're, you know, like they're not singing about something that's sad, there's this pain in their voice that I for some reason I just really enjoy. So it's my number four. I mean, like, it gets stuck in my head all the time when I was a kid.
Have you seen the music video?
You know what? I probably have, but I don't remember it.
I love the music video. It's you know, it's an 80s music video from a movie, so of course it uses clips from the film. But I love it because Duran Duran, when I've watched documentaries on the making of Bond songs. That's how much of a Bond fan I am. And Duran Duran were such Bond fans, and you can tell in the video. So, and of course it ends with some girl asking the guy, what's your name? And he goes, Bon, Simon Le Bon. So.
Oh my. Oh, well, on that note, let's go to your number three.
Okay, my number three. Well, my number three is one that I don't know if people forget that it's a Bond theme, but it's been used for a lot most recently was used in one of my favorite films from the last couple years, and with one of my favorite actresses lip-syncing it in the last couple years, and that's Live and Let Die from 1973. And of course I'm referring to when Jennifer Lawrence dances to it in American Hustle.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. This is also my number three. But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die. Live and let die.
Oh, really? So we can both talk about it then?
We can both talk about it, yeah.
Now, the song, I think what makes the song for me is what makes the song, I'm guessing, for a lot of other people, is that it starts really slow, but that breakdown in the middle of after each chorus is insane. And it doesn't even sound like it's the same song, and yet it goes together so well. When you play the clip, you have to include that part of the song in it. I think that's what makes the song. So I don't know how I can explain it beyond that, but...
This song, it's so powerful, and it was written by one of the Beatles.
Yes.
And it's just, this was the best thing about the movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's again, it's a Roger Moore film.
The first
and
one. So,
oh, that is, I keep forgetting that. I keep forgetting
that's his,
that.
That's his first, Dice's that's first his first one. One. It is better than the film, although I would argue I really do like Yaphet Kotto as a Bond villain. But
there are some good things to the movie. I might be selling it short, but let me rephrase that. This is my favorite part of the movie. And it's just, yeah, that opening. It's just like no one is expecting it. That's the thing, is that it's like when Paul McCartney says, like, makes you give in and cry, beep, boop, beep, beat, you know, beat, beat, beat. Say live and let die, boom, boom, just like out of nowhere, it just explodes, and I think it takes everybody off guard. And then after you hear this drums, all of a sudden you hear this, you know, this piano and strings, and it's like, bam, bam, bam.
That's the part I'm referring to. That's the best part of the song.
Yeah, it's just, it goes up and down, changes tempo. It just goes all over the place.
I even think McCartney realizes that that was the best part of the song because the lyrics after that opening are pretty minimal.
Yeah, they really are. Absolutely. I mean, it's a short lyrical song, but it's much longer once you add in the instruments. And I was quite surprised when Jennifer Lawrence started lip syncing this.
Well, it was because it was set in the 70s and it would have come out, you know, recently for those characters. But watching her do it and then dance with the mop, but that honestly was probably my favorite part of that movie, and I like that movie a lot. So.
I was surprised at how much I liked that movie, and she was such an awesome part of that movie. Yeah, it's okay. So this came out in 73. This was one of those one of my first CDs was a James Bond collection soundtrack.
Mine too, actually.
And okay, was it the one where it had the little guy in the corner? And it was red blood and then gold on the outside.
Like... No, I'm a little bit younger than you. Mine was it was called The Best of Bond, James Bond, and it was a blue CD cover. It came out before Die Another Day came out, because they only had it up to World Is Not Enough.
Okay, I see it now. Yeah, I see it now. Yeah, mine was different. Mine was gold lettering in the right. Top right corner. It's the 30th anniversary collection. That's what it was. This is a great song. This is something that even if you took it out of the Bond atmosphere, this is just something that you crank. You can only listen to this loud. That is the only setting you can listen to this to.
Yeah, and if you're hearing it in the car, try not. I dare you not to speed when that breakdown comes on.
Yeah, and keep your eyes on the road because you might be banging your head up and down. All right. Well, I guess since that was my number three as well, we're moving right along. Give us your number two.
Okay. It's back to mine again. I forgot. My number two is a song that I don't think that people would identify as the most iconic by this singer. The singer I'm referring to is Shirley Bassey, and everyone identifies her immediately for Goldfinger. Ashamedly will say that Goldfinger is not on my list, but I figure that I doesn't need to be on the list, though. I'm talking about my personal favorites. Goldfinger is iconic. Again, this goes back to what we were talking about last week with the themes, is that we're not picking out the best themes, because obviously that would have to be number one. That would be everybody's number one, because it was the first one that had lyrics. It's so identified with Bond. But I kind of feel like it has Star Trek II syndrome, where everyone already accepts that as the best one, so it doesn't need to be said.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I like that perspective. But keep going. Keep going. Sorry.
So instead, my personal favorite is the one she did after that, 1971, from an underrated Bond film. At least for me, I know everybody else hates it, but I love it. Diamonds Are Forever.
I love the song. Love the movie.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. stimulate to tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me. Diamonds are forever.
Everybody hates this movie. I know that it's silly, and I know Connery looks like he doesn't really want to be there, but first of all, I would take a sleepwalking Connery over George Lazenby any day of the week.
I agree completely. I think it's so weird that in 1967 we have You Only Live Twice, 69 we have Honor, Majesty, Secret Service with Lazenby, and on 71 we get Connery again. It's so freaking weird.
Everyone loves Honor, Majesty, Secret Service. I love the Bond girl, and I love the ending.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't met a single person who has actually liked Honor Emerge.
Oh, you then you haven't met Bond fans because they loud. I think it's like a cool thing to praise Honor Majesty Secret Service. I was bored, and I can't stand George Lazenby in that film.
You and I are in complete agreement on that.
So when Diamonds Are Forever came around, as silly as that film was, I was so in for it, and I love that film. I'm going to say it's underrated. It's a guilty pleasure. But as far as the song goes, I mean, I like that it's haunting, and I think my favorite part of this song is the opening. It's not a synth, but it has like this twinkle effect when the song comes in. Almost like it's a sparkling diamond. I don't know. But well, you'll hear it as you play it, and it kind of is the piano line of the song, but I love how sensual it is, and I love there's a part of the song, and I'm sorry to get so graphic, but there's a part of the song where Shirley Bassey is singing about diamonds are forever, you know, love it, touch it, stroke it, and then caress it or whatever. And then I heard some in the, and this is coming from the producers of the song, and Shirley Bassey herself, they told her to imagine her singing about a penis.
They said that?
Yes, like, they did.
Like, according legitimately, they're like, oh yeah, just think about a man's privates.
Yeah. I'll send you the link that's in one of the documentaries.
That's so weird.
So that song takes on a whole new meaning, but it's I love the song anyway. And like I said, it's one of those ones, it's a Sean Connery era song, so they use the melody throughout the whole movie, but I think it's kind of forgotten because Shirley Bassey did such an iconic one in Goldfinger. But I think if you don't want to watch the movie again, and I get it, a lot of people don't like that movie, I think the song is really good. So Diamonds Are Forever.
I like how you put it. I like that you use the word haunting, because she definitely has, Shirley Bassey has that aspect to her with her voice where it can sound haunting. And like when they add that echo and she repeats herself with forever.
Yeah.
It was like, diamonds are forever, forever. You know, yeah. It's just so 70s and so great. And it's haunting. It's great. And it's campy at the same time. And it works. It works with the movie, and I think it works overall.
I really hope we don't have the same number one, but we'll see. You're on your number two, right?
Yeah, we're on my number two. So my number two is, and kind of to echo your comments about how, and I'm totally going to steal that, about the Wrath of Khan syndrome, where it's just everybody, it's established as the best, and you can't argue it even if you feel differently. Goldfinger is my number two. And I know a lot of people probably think that it should be number one on the list. But like you said, this is our favorites. This is the ones that mean something to us. And so with Goldfinger, it's an icon, you know, like what can you say about it?
Goldfinger, he's the man with the Midas touch, a spider's touch. A cold finger.
I mean, it was saying at the last Oscars, or at least two Oscars ago.
And she still had it. I was surprised. I mean, like,
she was freaking amazing.
She belted it. I don't know how old Shirley Bassey is at this point. She's got to be in her 70s. But she sounded fantastic.
I remember going on Twitter after that happened and like scrolling through and seeing what people were saying. And a lot of people were like, oh yeah, Shirley Bassey still has it. Basically, everyone under 20 is like, what is this song? Like, who is this woman and why does she think she can sing? I've never had so much more old man syndrome than in that moment, because I was like, listen,
it's not so much old man syndrome. It's young people not knowing good music syndrome.
Which is very detrimental to our society, but I was just like, you need to show Shirley Bassey some respect, youngin. You know, it's just, it was an amazing performance. When people think Bond music, they think Goldfinger.
Yes.
You know, it is ubiquitous.
And that's kind of, like, again, that's why I didn't put it on the list, because I almost feel like, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't put it on yours, but I almost feel like it goes without saying. Like,
yeah, I just feel like when you hear the song, when you hear the lyrics and the music, the imagery pops into your head. The movie doesn't even pop into your head. It's the gold imagery from the opening. And it's just, it ties in so well. It's synonymous.
Okay? Yeah.
The visuals go with the music. The music go with the visuals. It was perfectly written for the feeling of the movie and the feeling of the time. And even Connery's acting, it just works.
Well, you have to think about it in the terms of the broader sense of that film. Goldfinger is the third Bond film. Mm-hmm. And really, it's the Bond film that set the template for every Bond film that came after it, you know, pre-Craig. Craig kind of shook up the formula a little bit. But Goldfinger, that set everything. You've got the theme, the sung theme at the beginning. You've mm-hmm. got this is the first one where Q was in From Russia with Love, but he didn't give Bond the car. This is the first one with a car.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first one with extra special gadgets. You know, this is the first one where you get the femme fatale girlfriend. No, because I guess Tatiana in From Russia with Love was sort of supposed to be that too.
Well, but also you had Honey from Dr. No.
Yeah, but she wasn't supposed to. Honey was always good.
You're right.
Tatiana was working for Rosa Klebb, and of course, you got Pussy Galore, but this is the... Okay, if not the first femme fatale, it's the first one of the Bond girl names. Like, they always have these really strange names.
Yep.
And of course, everyone remembers that one because, you know, she says, my name is Pussy Galore, and then Sean Connery says, I must be dreaming. I'm shocked that they got away with that in 1964.
I know, I can't believe that they got away with it, and it's so... And they milk it too, which is just so funny, because when he's spying on Goldfinger, and then she comes up behind him and then drops his legs, and then he falls forward, and then he just kind of looks up, he's like, pussy. You know, he's just like, hits it so hard, and you just start laughing because you're just like, oh my god, a grown man is saying this to a woman on film.
But you see what I mean, though? It set the template for everything that came after it, and that includes this theme, so...
You're absolutely right, because, I mean, you know, with Dr. No, you had the theme, and then you had Kingston Calypso, and From Russia with Love, you had just that piece of music, but then there was you had a vocal version that was heard.
Yeah, but not played over the credits.
Yeah, it was in the closing credits, so... Like you said, I mean, like, and I really think, like, you know, I mean, Dr. No was a huge hit, so was From Russia with Love, but Goldfinger was a behemoth.
Yeah.
When it came out, and that's when it really cemented itself. The franchise, I think, as well.
Right. I mean, like, even thinking about it, you get the first henchman that you remember in Goldfinger, mm-hmm. an odd job.
Yeah.
Because Robert Shaw wasn't really a henchman,
I wouldn't really call him a henchman, but yeah, it's just I think there's a lot of firsts in Goldfinger. But let's bring it down. What's your number one? I am aching.
I'm curious to see if it's the same one, because
it really might be, because I really think that you and I might have the same one here.
Yeah, my last one. It's on the top Bond themes of all time. Written by the composer's, I believe it was the composer's wife wrote the lyrics as sort of a love letter to James Bond. And it's sung so beautifully. It's in the best Roger Moore film, in my opinion. 1977, Carly Simon, Nobody Does It Better.
Yes.
We really, really, really don't have the same one.
Really?
Yeah, we severely don't, because I would put this as one of my least favorites.
Oh, I love this song. It's so beautiful. And the thing that I love about it is that its beauty doesn't disguise the fact that it can go with a Bond movie, because I don't know, there's something like For Your Eyes Only. The song is so sensual, but at the same time, it's so beautifully composed, so beautifully written, and it goes with the motif of the movie. I really do think that, as much as we've given Roger Moore crap, Spy Who Loved Me is my favorite one of his outings. And it has to do with a lot of different reasons. I think his level of humor worked well, was balanced in that film. She might be one of my favorite Bond girls, Anya Amasova, because that was really the first time that you saw a Bond girl who was something more than just a damsel in distress. I mean, she was in distress in parts of that film, but she could take care of herself. Mm-hmm. Especially when you consider the film that came before it, Man with the Golden Gun, had that ditz for a Bond girl that I couldn't stand. But I don't know. There's something so sensual about this song, and I love listening to it in my car. So it has to be my number one. And I love Carly Simon.
Yeah, I'm a big Carly Simon fan too. But like when I was a kid, I just didn't like it. I think because I didn't like it as a kid, I don't like it as an adult. Like, it just kind of stuck with me. Yeah, I like Carly Simon, but for some reason I just didn't fit the tone for me. Like right when I watched it for the first time, I was like, this doesn't feel like a Bond opener. This feels like something like a pop song you'd hear on the radio.
Way to dislike good things.
That's your response every single time we disagree. But
it's true.
I mean, like, I'm not knocking the song, and I'm not knocking you or your choice for it. I'm just saying that I personally did not connect with it.
Well, and also at the same time, I saw this song so heavily associated with Bond anyway, because I remember they used this song and a bunch of people singing this song in different styles when TNN was promoting their Bond marathon lineup leading up to Die Another Day. So I didn't have that problem that you did, because it was so connected with Bond. They were forcing it, they were connecting it so much with Bond that it never felt anything but a Bond theme to me.
Oh man, TNN. I remember TNN.
It was a weird commercial because they had a bunch of people singing the song in different styles and to advertise their Bond lineup, so.
I loved Bond marathons. I absolutely loved them. I mean, whenever they were on, it didn't matter what movie it was. It didn't matter where they were in the marathon. I stopped whatever I was doing and watched it.
So, yes, she's my number one. Baby, she's the best. So.
All right. Well, my number one is very different. Like, I for some reason, I thought we were gonna strike the same chord and hit it the same place.
Well, I'm glad we didn't.
I am too, you know, because, you know, diversity is a key thing and differing opinions is fantastic, and that's why we do what we do. And I think the reason why this one connected with me the most is, like, I've never really enjoyed this singer before. The singer really hit it home, I think. This was a resurgence. This was a comeback story for Bond. And I it hit me at just the right age where I was really getting into Bond. Like, I was old enough to, like, start really understanding, where it was kind of that transfer from just the pretty colors and action to understanding what the story is.
This singer you didn't care for better not have starred in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, because I'm going to hurt you if that's who it is.
It is Tina Turner singing GoldenEye.
See reflections on the water, more than darkness in the depths. See him surface and never a shadow. On the wind I feel his breath. GoldenEye, I found his weakness. GoldenEye, you'll do what I please. GoldenEye, no time for sweetness, but a bitter kiss will bring him to his knees.
What do you mean you don't like Tina Turner? There's something wrong with you.
Well, no, I don't dislike Tina Turner. I mean, I'm just saying that I don't like, I'm not a fan of Tina Turner's music. Okay, listen. This is one of those times. This is one of those times where maybe our sexuality is coming between us. Okay, maybe.
And yet you like Lana Del Rey.
Okay, touche. That's a big touche. But anyway, okay, back to the movie. GoldenEye was an amazing movie.
It was. It was my first Bond movie.
It came out in 1995, and so I would have been 9. Yeah, I was 9 when this movie came out. And
I was 6. but I saw it a couple years later because my introduction to Bond is that movie and that game.
Oh my gosh, so there's so much around GoldenEye. It was a new Bond, a new decade, you know, a new era,
a new comeback, because before it'd been 6 years between License to Kill and that film.
6 years, that was a big deal back then. I mean, like, that never happened before that. I mean, like, once Dr. No came out in 62, we had one, like, we had year, 2 years, 2 years.
At the most, I think it was three.
Yeah, the most was three. And then, like, as I'm scrolling through these dates, 3, 2, and then all the way up until 89, bam, 6 years. That's a long time for a wait on the franchise. And then after that, it was every 2 years, like every 2 years and then 3 years again. But then we had another stint of 4 years between Die Another Day and Casino Royale. But you kind of need that breath when you're going to alter the franchise. But yeah, anyway, it was a fantastic film. Great bad guy, which was one of our own. We had a good girl and a bad girl.
Great bad girl.
The best bad girl ever. And oh my god, she killed people with her thighs? How freaking sexy and terrifying is that?
And it's Famke freaking Janssen. I mean, my god.
Oh.
Even if I'm not that way inclined, even I can see that she was phenomenal.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that you're gay, not dead. You know, like, it's just there's certain people, whatever, either gender or in between, that just transcend sexuality.
You could see that she was eating that role up and having fun.
You could tell she was just like, this is amazing and this is fun. And it was just a really good film. And on top of that, like, it was a fantastic opening credit sequence.
I'll tell you why, because in between License to Kill and GoldenEye, there's a major shift. The man who had done the opening credits for every single film, I think from Goldfinger onward, it was the same person. And then that person, I can't remember if he died or if he just stopped doing it, but this is when we get a shift to Daniel Kleinman, who did the openings for all four Brosnans and then Casino Royale and Skyfall.
And yeah, you can really tell.
And you can tell that he liked the way that the other guy did. He just updated it.
Yeah. And it's just, like, as I know this goes without saying, but the music matched the visuals perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
You had this Russian iconography mixed in with fire and guns, and it just harkened back to the Cold War, but at the same time brought you into a new era.
Well, yeah, because it was the first, because I remember that was the big thing at the time, is how are we going to do a Bond film now that the Soviet Union is gone?
Exactly, and they needed that transition, and they did it perfectly with those visuals, and Tina Turner's voice just pierced into your soul and just brought something out where she just hit all of those notes and just that snapping, that, like, ding ding ding.
Yeah,
it was, oh my gosh, it's just like, I just love talking about it, because I it was the first CD, the first compact disc that Tristan Riddell bought with his own money.
Really?
Yes. I love that soundtrack. I loved Eric Serra's soundtrack, because I'm pretty sure that he did The Fifth Element as well. Yeah, right after that, like right after GoldenEye, his next movie was The Fifth Element, and I bought that score as well. I was on a huge Eric Serra kick for some reason. Like, even as a little kid, I was just like, I want more of his music, and so I went to Best Buy, and it just really connected with me. I mean, it was composed by Bono and The Edge, and I'm not even a U2 fan, but I just think that's just cool to think that there's a Bond song that was composed by Bono and The Edge, sung by Tina Turner. And this just hits it out of the park. This was a great resurgence of Bond, and it was a great resurgence of music.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I will forgive your lack of love for Tina Turner, but then again, what's love got to do with it?
Oh my gosh. All right, well, we have some honorable mentions, but I only have one honorable mention. How many do you have?
I have three.
All right, well, lay it on me.
Well, one I already mentioned, Living Daylights. I love that song. Second one I want to mention, it's a song that I like, but it's a band that I like more, and that's the reason it's on the honorable mentions. The World Is Not Enough by Garbage. I'm a huge Garbage fan. Like, I can't even tell you. And I got to meet them a couple years ago, and I got my picture taken with Shirley Manson, and they performed that song in concert.
Oh, that's right. You showed me that picture. I like that picture.
And so it may not be the best song, but I like the fact that part of it feels like a retro throwback to some 60s some 60s Bond. But yeah, I'm biased because I love that band. I'm a huge Garbage fan. And my other one is one that I kind of feel is lost in the shuffle, especially in the early Bond themes. But I love the woman's voice, and I love the way that the strings and the melody of the song is, and that's "You Only Live Twice" by Nancy Sinatra.
That's one of my favorite Bond movies of all time is "You Only Live Twice," and Nancy Sinatra. I mean, there's just something special about her.
And, you know, listening to her talk about it, because, again, I've watched these documentaries, she said she was so nervous to do that song, and it wasn't kind of the style of singing that she was used to. But she did it so well. And I think what makes that song for me in particular is the strings in that song. It mm-hmm. uses some beautiful violins and some Asian-esque song, because that takes place in Japan.
Yeah, it definitely, you feel the Asian influence, and I think it really helped the story along.
So those are my three honorable mentions.
All right. Well, I only have one, and that is, I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with this song, and it's the reason why I didn't make my list, because I love, I there's no words that I can use to preface this to really justify it, and that's Another Way to Die from Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, well, about that, that's my number one of my least favorite songs.
And I get it.
You can keep Jack White and all of his white stripes. I know you're a fan, and that's why this is on there.
You're right. I mean, that's the thing. That's the reason why it's on here, is because I am a huge Jack White fan. He's one of the most talented musicians who have ever lived. And he is fantastic at what he does. He's a great songwriter, great performer. He's a different kind of singer. Like, if you don't like his voice, then you don't like his voice. And he has a hard voice to like. He's an acquired taste. And I like the song, I like the lyrics, I like the music video, but Alicia Keys has a better voice than Jack White, obviously, but at the same time, I do not like them paired together.
No, the thing that I like is, Alicia Keys, what are you doing? You're trying to sound like Jack White. That's not your style.
I don't think that she was trying to sound like Jack White. I just think, like, they could not harmonize.
No.
And so it just didn't work. And so I love the music. I love the way that Jack White plays. I love the lyrics, and I love Jack White in it. But if it didn't have Alicia Keys, I think it would have been better. I do not believe that this. I don't think.
Oh, so
this
the problem is Alicia Keys, not.
I do believe. Yeah, I think the problem was Alicia Keys, because her voice is like, her voice is smooth and sultry and amazing, and Jack White's voice is not smooth. It is not sultry.
Yeah, okay? Well, they came together and it made it sound like nails on a chalkboard. That's the one Bond opening that I will skip.
And I get it. I get it completely. Even though I think that Quantum of Solace has one of the greatest visuals
disagree too.
Oh no, I love that one.
One that they didn't use Daniel Kleinman for, and you can feel his absence. It's terrible, that opening.
Oh no, I loved it. I thought it was. I thought it was super sexy, and I thought the CGI was top notch. Loved it.
There's a lot of problems I have with Quantum of Solace. But...
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely the absolute weakest Daniel Craig film.
I hope it stays that way. I have high hopes for Spectre.
I've seen the teaser trailer probably 15 times now, and I watched it last night again because that's what I do. And I am so excited for this. I'm more excited for this than I was for Skyfall.
Yeah, me too. Expectations are high.
Yeah, expectations are very high, and I don't think that they're going to disappoint, because, I mean, it's the same people who brought us Skyfall, so I think we're going to have some consistency.
Just real quickly, because we're not a negative podcast, but if I had to pick three Bond themes that I wouldn't that are my least favorite, Another Way to Die is number one, Man with the Golden Gun is number two, and All Time High is number three. Man with the Golden Gun, because it was the same thing as Jack White. I like Lulu when she sang To Sir With Love. That's one of my favorite movie songs of all time. But the style of Man with a Golden Gun, it just sounds like she's screeching. And All Time High, I like Rita Coolidge, but that song is just a little too blasé for me.
Yeah, I like to kind of jump off on you. Like I'd say that my three in no particular order is All Time High. For the exact same reasons that you did, it's just kind of weird, and I just don't jump on board with it. And probably You Know My Name from Casino Royale.
Yeah, I didn't think that was so great as people were making it out to be. Like people were saying, "Oh, this is great, this is phenomenal," and I was like, "It's 2.5 out of 5."
Yeah, it was too different. I know you can't really say Casino Royale in a song without making it very obvious, but it was too, I know they were trying to start something new, but it was just a little too different for me. And then, nobody does it better. I'm sorry, man.
You're wrong about that, but that's okay. You're entitled to your wrong opinion.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been a lot of fun. As you could tell, Matt and I love talking about Bond. We're going to do it again.
We're not over. It's not over. Like I said, Spectre is in November for us. So expect some more Bond stuff between now and then.
Absolutely. And please go to our website. Go to thenerdparty.com. That's where you can find everything that you need to know about all of our previous episodes. And you can also go to facebook.com/thenerdparty. Same information's there, but except you can interact with us. Leave us a message. Comment on one of the episodes. I know that most people out there have a Facebook, and we try to check that as much as we can. Or you can email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. And please, if you can, write us a review. We'd really appreciate it if you could write us a review on iTunes.
Speaking of which, I just want to give a quick shout out to Matt Rushing, who I know is a member of the Trek FM family. I get so confused. They both have Trek at the beginning. It's like Star Wars and Star Trek. They have the star at the beginning. Trek FM family, I know he's a friend of yours. He's a friend of mine. He left us a 5-star review. So thank you so much, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Matt. We really do appreciate it, just like Matt said. And
please forgive my mispronunciation of your network by me remembering to give you a shout out. So mea culpa.
We're all Star Trek fans here, and so if you can give us a 5-star review, and if you can leave a few comments on iTunes, it would mean a lot to us, and it brings us up on the ratings. And we will do for you what we just did for the amazing Matt Rushing, and that is mention you on the podcast.
And you can reach us directly. My Twitter handle is @mhanson0207. What's yours, Tristan?
Mine is @theinsanerobin.
So thank you very much for listening, guys, and we will see you all next show.
Coming up next week.
I'm going to show you something beautiful. Everyone screaming for mercy. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. You're all puppets. Tangled in strings. There are no strings on me.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.